Former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says that loneliness is a growing health epidemic. Technology now allows us to connect with others more than ever. Yet rates of loneliness have doubled since the 1980s. Today, over 40% of adults in the U.S. report feeling lonely, with some experts saying this may grow to become our number one killer.
Today, therapist and relationship expert Damon L. Jacobs joins us to look at the loneliness epidemic we are facing and the ways it's manifesting itself in hookup apps and how we think about ourselves.
Plus, at the Super Bowl, Justin Timberlake does not bring sexy back.
Uma Thurman feels guilty about empowering Harvey Weinstein and is still in pain from a stunt she felt she was coerced into doing by Kill Bill director Quentin Tarantino.
And an online hookup goes horribly wrong when a Grindr date asks a guy for his digits, and he didn't expect this. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hello, Fausto and Mark.
You have the wrong number. Even though I called
you. Who is this?
Hi, darling. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you boys doing? How are you surviving this cold?
How do we know it's the real Damon L. Jacobs and not an impersonator?
Well, because I've earned myself a blue dot. You know, like on Facebook, when you're a real boy, they give you a blue dot.
Oh, you're like verified or something?
Yeah, I don't understand how all my friends get their accounts verified on social media. Every guest of the show is verified except us. And one guy even used his appearance on the podcast to get verified on social media. I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Do you want to be verified? It's a pretty easy process.
Share the secrets with the world. I want to be
real.
I
will tell you the secret Facebook society of blue dot verification. You just go to the help place and fill out a form and basically say who you are and why you want to be verified and why you're at risk for being impersonated. And that's it. It takes like 2 minutes.
Oh.
But see, the thing about it is like, I run across a lot of people on social media and especially those hookup apps using photos of mine. And to me, I'm kind of like glad they're out there because they're doing the work that I don't want to do.
They're hitting on guys that you don't want to hit on.
Yeah, they're sucking the dicks. I don't want to suck. It's all good. You know, we're making the world. Because, you know, as a former Surgeon General said, we're dealing with a loneliness epidemic. And so, you know, far it be for me to deny other people the pleasure of my company.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think you've got that correct on all ends, and especially about the loneliness epidemic that we are facing in this country. It's a real thing. Not only in this country, in the UK, they just came up with a department of loneliness in their government.
Really? Wow.
Really? This just like in the last 2 months.
And Mae West is the chairman. She's like, boys, one at a time, please.
Well, I saw a TED Talk not too long ago, and they said that like one of the number one health predictors for people was their interaction with other people, and not just like your significant other that you might have, but even just like the day-to-day people. So like maybe the guy that like parks your car or the checkout person or like your barista or all that kind of stuff.
So if I'm like Peapodding, is that something people do? Or I'm sorry, Uber Eats my dinner, I'm slowly killing myself by not interacting with a waiter and tipping them 20% or more.
It could be, but you know what? I don't think it's so much necessarily about the quantity of contacts we have. I happen to think it's about the quality of contacts we have. Because you could be around people all the time and feel completely alone and feel completely alienated and separated. Or you could be sitting on a mountaintop in India, meditating, feeling interconnectedness and connection with all life, present, past. And either one of those depends on your perspective.
You're kind of a visionary when it comes to gay men's health and LGBT health. And, you know, you're certainly an early proponent of PrEP. And it sounds, now it seems kind of a commonplace, like, duh, medicine to people who are sexually active on Truvada. What do you think is our kind of causing this depression epidemic, and what can we do to sort of alleviate it?
So this is really interesting. The former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, spoke a lot about this, and he was so eloquent and really compassionate with how he discussed this. So, of course, he was fired. But what he talked about before he was removed was how the 21st century is allowing us technical advancements in so many ways and yet holding us back in a lot of ways. So you and I can talk on the phone. Remember when we used to like have really bad phone connections and long distance charges? And now we can just sit and talk, and you have had this podcast since 2005. So you're reaching people all over the world digitally, and as opposed to your finger digits or your other body digits, but you also reach, you know, tens of thousands of people every day digitally. But there is also a way in which we struggle in this world by our perception of separation. And what I say by perception is this idea that there is a you, there is a me, there is a them, and these are all separate entities. And what I think the key to resolving some of this loneliness epidemic that we're seeing in so many parts of the world, it calls upon us to look at some of the teachings that have been around for centuries that have offered us ideas and guides about how to experience that idea that we are connected as living beings, even when we're not exactly in the same room. Even when people die, even when they move away, that we can still feel connected to them as energetic beings. And, you know, it sounds a little new agey, it sounds a little hippie, you know, it kind of gets written off. But I think these are really important ideals that have been handed down to us through, especially through Buddhism and Eastern philosophy, that tells us that that connection is not contingent on physicality.
But is social media and our isolation as a consequence because of it that devastating? Is this, does this have the potential of being as deadly as it sounds?
No, it could be if it's used that way. And so I think social media and technology and all this stuff that we didn't grow up with that we have now, I think it's totally neutral. I think if you approach Facebook or Instagram or social media from the position that we are separate, we are alone, we are alienated people, you're going to use it to reinforce that belief and come away from it feeling even worse than where you started. If you approach social media and Facebook from a place of love, from a place of connection, from a place of abundance, from a place of saying, here's this opportunity to use these technological tools to be connected with others, to reinforce a sense of connection that I already experience, then you're going to use it for that and come away from it having that experience reinforced as well.
Well, what gets somebody into that mindset in the first place? I mean, so you're saying it's all about perspective. What does it get the, get someone to be like, this is making us disconnect from each other?
Well, so we're in this world and we're in these vessels called bodies, right? So we have these bodies that make us look like I'm here in Brooklyn, Mark and Fausto are here there in Chicago, Cher is there in Malibu, and we're all these separate entities based on the bodies that we occupy at this moment. But what Eastern spiritual practices offer to us is a perspective that says that that's not the full story. That's not the whole picture. That's only like a fraction of what's really happening. And that we are actually interconnected energy beings. And if we can tap into that and focus on that and meditate on that, then there's often a sense of warmth and connection. And then when we go into the world and we operate in our lives and we walk around and make decisions from that place of interconnection, quite often that leads us to get involved in activities or volunteer or do work that also reinforces that sense that we are interconnected energetic beings. You know, I run a Facebook group where I talk about prep all day, and we have nearly 20,000 members, the Prep Facts group. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just been the most incredible evidence of showing all over the world how connected we are, that we're talking about sex and we're talking about prep, but we're also reinforcing this sense of humanity and energetic connection every single day all over the world. That to me is an incredible experience.
Well, we've certainly seen, you know, a lot of our trust in, you know, online communities being shaken this past year as we start to realize that not only, you know, are foreign agents, Russian bots and all these other kind of entities trying to put content on these places to divide us against each other. But really the influence of you know, right-wing Republicans and Donald Trump is that it's turning people to be very, very combative and not very compassionate against each other. And I'm seeing this, you know, on forums like RuPaul's Drag Race and even, you know, like makeup forums and places that, you know, should be very isolated or very neutral, has a lot of people just fighting with each other all the time. And anywhere that I go, from a Star Trek forum to, you know, for especially obviously politics or LGBT culture, it just has a lot of people just like, you know, what exactly did you mean by that? And I'm going to start an online campaign to discredit you because of one thing you said, instead of like trying to meet face to face and try to understand where we're at.
But I don't think that's particularly new or unusual for the 21st century. I don't think in 2018 we're seeing more of that. I think the difference is that because of social media now, it's so easy for people to express these opinions. But nastiness and attack and scapegoating and anger and fighting have been around my whole life. Yeah. And if you don't believe me, talk to Eileen Fulton.
Who's that?
So Eileen Fulton, I know Mark knows this one. Eileen Fulton played a character named Lisa on a show called As the World Turns.
ABC.
She was really the first villainess on daytime television. And this is back when, you know, daytime had millions of viewers every day. I mean, these shows, there were only three networks, and pretty much everybody was watching one of the shows that was on ABC or CBS during the day, or NBC. Eileen Fulton in the 1960s was on the number one show for 10 years called As the World Turns. And she was the antagonist. She played Lisa. She was the mean one. She was the slut of the day, the harlot. And the mail and the letters that she would get from people were so nasty, so vicious. And a woman actually came up to her in a supermarket and slapped her and caused her face to bleed because the woman's ring hit her face.
Sure.
And this woman could not decipher who this actress was, the fictional person, from the real person. Mm-hmm. And so anyone who has ever been on a daytime soap opera, because the relationship that people have with soap actors and soap characters is very different, or it might be similar to the kind of Star Trek thing you have.
Mm.
But the soap actors are so used to getting these letters, the kind you see like so openly public online now. Attack, hate, criticism, you're wrong, you're bad, you're evil. It's so reductive, it's so simplistic, but it's not new.
No, it's not new. I remember Marco from One Life to Live, he was telling a story on some talk show. He says, a woman threw a flower pot from the second floor at me because she didn't like my character.
That's right.
And he couldn't believe it.
Everybody's like, a critic.
How do you not separate like this fantasy from reality?
That's right. I mean, Andrea Evans had to leave One Life to Live because she was getting death threats in the 80s. And they were credible death threats. So again, the only reason I say that is because I don't think people attacking each other on Facebook in 2018 is any different from what anything that's ever gone on. I just think that because of social media and because of the access, we can see it now in a way that's so transparent. And, you know, I also think what might be, or what is unusual about this particular time in U.S. history, is this angst that I feel like everybody is experiencing right now, on the left, on the right, this uncertainty and fear. And we don't live in a society that teaches us how to manifest fear in a way that leads us to grow and learn new things. We are taught how to experience fear in a way that teaches us to attack and shame and criticize others. And we're seeing a lot of evidence of that now on social media as well, in my opinion.
Well, what's a good tactic for dealing with that kind of fear when you're feeling afraid?
So one thing that I do when I started the Prep Facts group 4.5 years ago was a very, very clear guideline that you cannot attack people in this group. You can do that anywhere else on social media, but we're here to learn. We're here to talk about facts. We're here to talk about science. We're here to talk about sex. And you cannot use that information as a weapon against other people. And if you do, you can't be in the group. You can't play in the sandbox. So it's setting limits like that. I won't deal on social media with people, and we won't have people in the group who sabotage that way. In my personal life and in my public life on social media, I won't deal with what I guess we would call the trolls, or the really angry people who don't want to have a discussion of compassion and understanding, who just want to attack and be right. I won't be friends with these people. I won't associate with these people to the best of my ability to do so. And I think we can all create boundaries and standards to around that. You know, Facebook is all optional. Instagram is optional. You don't have to do these things. There's no mandate that you have to do these things.
Well, I think a lot of people who are trying to build careers or businesses that rely on the attention of the public do feel, and in some ways they're right, that they do need to reach out through people through whatever means necessary in order to build that base. Because it's all about that base, but, you know, right? I mean, maybe the King and I was right about this all along. You remember the song, "Whenever I Feel Afraid, I Hold My Head Erect." Or my cock erect. And whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid. And basically the message of this is that, you know, sometimes it's the mindset that you take when things are uncertain that can have a profound impact on its outcome. And it's not to say that, you know, obviously, like, I'm really despondent on the fact that, you know, the U.S. government, our Senate and House of Representatives, voted almost unanimously to pass sanctions on Russia, and President Trump signed it into law, and now is stating that he's not going to enact them because he doesn't feel like it. And so, because of this and so a wide variety of issues, I just don't feel like, you know, I'm seriously considering, like, what should we move out of this country? Should we flee? the here in Illinois, the GOP is actually having an out of the closet, actual avowed Nazi running
a Holocaust denier.
He says, "I am a proud Nazi." This is a person who identifies politically as a Nazi, aligning himself with Adolf Hitler and the Holocaust. You know. And denying the Holocaust here as a legitimate candidate that people can vote for in the next election. And I'm just going, should we move? What do we do? It really is. And sometimes, you know, as the AIDS crisis taught us, when we're faced with these insurmountable obstacles, sometimes the best thing we can do is make art, is to bring people together through our creativity and find a solution based on our ability to come together.
I agree. And, you know, I don't believe in shoulds, Fausto, so I don't want – there's
did
no
I say should. Should?
Oh, yeah. You said, should I move? Should I stay? Yeah.
Can I move? Would I move?
Can I move? Would you move?
Is moving an option?
Is moving an option? Is this a good idea? Those are questions I'm legitimately asking myself.
And I think everyone has to figure out, like, where their boundaries are. And not everybody has an option to move. You know,
we might not. We you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I'm moving to Canada. And Canada says, no, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not sure things are all that much better in other parts of the world right now. I mean, I think this level of
attack.
You mean
Cambodia doesn't have its own problems?
Apparently they do. I think I'm more with you, Fausto, in my position of, you know, I'm not going anywhere. You're not going to make me move. I'm going to stay and fight. Now, I say that. I also have the privilege of living in New York City in Brooklyn. So I'm not facing Nazis on a daily basis. But to the best of my ability, I'm not going to live in an environment where my physical safety is threatened. My mortality is threatened on an everyday basis.
Well, did you hear this? This happened just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I guess a friend of ours was walking down the street in Boys Town, and he sees this guy holding his hand, and he's covered in blood, running to the hospital. And he said to himself, that's going to be on the news. And sure enough, I guess some guy hooked up with this other guy on Grindr and cut off his middle finger.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm surprised that more, like, news media isn't, like, reporting on this. And part of it is, like, and so I went online and started just kind of getting the vibe of gay men or how they're reacting to that. And they're like, oh, honey, anybody can cut your finger off anytime, you know, or your dick off. It's like, you can bring somebody home. You don't know what kind of crazy shit they're into. It's like, you got to keep your, you know. And part of it is, I understand that this is blaming the victim. It's saying, it's like, is insinuating that this gentleman who got his finger cut off wasn't paying attention. But, you know, and sometimes horrible people will mask themselves or pretend themselves to be very charming and do some terrible things to us. But I'm thinking, you know, maybe the people who have these hookup apps are the ones that are most distressed, because you can threaten to cut off a guy's dick off and they'll still get back on that Grindr the next day. But if you cut off their fingers, they can't use Grindr anymore. And so, you know, the people who are running Grindr are like freaking the fuck out about this, because it's like no fingers means no customers means no ads.
You can't click on an ad if you don't have a finger.
That's right.
We could use your nose. You don't have to be so ableist, Fausto.
Well, they might have to turn Grindr and hook it up with, like, you know, Siri and Alexa and be able to, like, hey, Alexa, get me some dick.
Do iPhones respond to penises?
Well, no, they don't. That's to any kind of touch. Yeah.
Touch. Yeah.
But, you know, it's like the interface is really designed for the human hand, you know, and there are limitations, you know.
Oh, let's set up the an iPhone and then let's use like the head of your dick to turn it on when they do the fingerprint scan and see what that's like. You don't think it'll work?
I don't think that's going to work.
Let's try it.
Because you have ridges on your thumb.
Oh, you don't think I have ridges on my dick?
Maybe you do.
Maybe something.
I guess the FBI could do, like, you know, you could do like a thumbprint scan of somebody's dick. Because I know some people out there that are pretty good at getting to be like, I've seen that dick before. You know, I know some gay men who can recognize a penis the way they recognize a person's face.
Yep.
So in terms of, like, you know, and I'm kind of, you know, I'm bringing up this stuff because it's like, we're sort of, you know, we're in an age now that a lot of, like, gay bars and establishments are saying that they've sort of have to, you know, scale down their businesses because they feel like the internet and these hookup apps have sort of taken away a lot of people's needs to come together in a physical space.
Well, people are saying, though, in general, people just aren't going out as much anymore. Yeah. Millennials, like they say, aren't going out to the bars or to parties or to concerts like they used to. When I was a young kid, and David, I know you're a little bit younger than I am, but when you were young in your 20s, you know, the baby boomers were still going out. It seemed like you'd go out to a club, you'd go someplace, and places were always jam-packed. And I guess the people are having a feeling like it's just not the same anymore.
Well, I think that the need is different. I mean, when I was in my 20s in San Francisco in the 90s, that was basically one of the few ways to be around other gay people. And to find sex was to go out to bars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Castro and South of Market offered many, many opportunities for that. And now we have so many other ways to connect. I'm not saying better ways, I'm not saying worse ways, but we have better ways or different ways. Mm-hmm. I think one of the advantages of having apps like Scruff and many of the other social apps is that there often can be a chance to interact with people or meet people that you wouldn't normally see otherwise, or that you may not see at a bar. I was in Vancouver a couple months ago doing a talk. And I went to this club afterwards, and there was this boy who in this club who I thought was just so gorgeous, just so, so cute. But he wouldn't give me the time of day. I'm not even sure he noticed I was there. I mean, he was hanging out with his friends. He was dancing with his friends. I did not register a blip on the radar for him. And it's like, okay, you know, whatever, that happens. And then right after the club ended, I went back to my hotel, and there he was on Scruff, and he was really, really into me, and he was really interested, and he came over, and we had a great time. And and I asked him, it's like, you know, oh, did you know what happened in the club? He didn't even see me in the club. He had no idea I was there. I mean, so what we now have with these social apps is an ability to enhance and expand our opportunities for fun, for play, for pleasure, for connection. And I actually think that's a really good thing. And, you know, some of these bars that are closing now, not all, but some, were not necessarily the most ethical businesses in the first place. They didn't always treat customers very well. They didn't always treat their clientele with very much respect. And I think we're seeing a lot of changes in industry, as we always have. You know, this was also, I remember in the 90s, like Circuit City stereo stores were everywhere. Mm-hmm. And eventually they became obsolete, partly because you could order stuff from Amazon and partly because they treated you like shit. I mean, they were just like a horrible business. They didn't have good business practices. They were, and I had no love loss when they went out of business. This is just kind of the evolution of capital. And so I do think the clubs and the bars that serve their community and really can differentiate and position themselves as advocates in the community, at least in New York City, I see are still doing pretty well and still have a really strong crowd. But the bars and the clubs that treat people badly and don't really hold ethical business practices are not doing so well.
Mm. Well, isn't it the devil you know as opposed to the devil you don't know? I mean, it's like, it's one thing having your neighborhood bar being owned by an unscrupulous person in your neighborhood. It's another thing, you know, these social media sites, we don't know who owns them anymore. You know, and it's like, I don't trust Twitter. I don't trust Facebook. Do you? I mean,
what do you mean by trust?
Well, I don't know what the hell they're doing. It's like, you know, it's like I see all these news stories and they're all like they're, you know, a chunk of their income is coming from propaganda bots, you know, and I'm just kind of like going, I can't trust this platform. I enjoy it. I use it, but I treat it the same way as I'm reading the National Enquirer. I'm not going to use this as a way to make any decisions that impact my life.
But people have kind of learned to take it at face value, and they say they see something posted on social media, like it's posted there, it must be true. Although I do have to say, I am seeing less and less of those kind of spam fake news articles. So I think Facebook has been doing something right, or I've just gotten really good at blocking all those sites.
Well, and Twitter said that they were going to announce, you know, we're going to be letting you know that you've been exposed to spam bots or any kind of thing. And but they haven't done anything. That was, you know, months ago. So part of me, it's like we're struggling right now because we naively in some ways went into this new world where we're just like kumbaya, the internet, everybody, peace and love and everybody. And then, you know, there's some people who looked at that and said, oh, I can exploit this. And they did. And that's why we have Trump as president, you know? I mean, Trump as president is not a small thing. It's like in the past year, we've seen a decline now in the minority of Americans' view of LGBT people. A majority of Americans now have an unfavorable view of LGBT people that we haven't had in the past decade or so. And that to
really?
Me, and that to me is very distressing. You know, the fact that like we're back, I was like, you know, and that's how much, you know, Will and Grace sucks, the new show. Cause Will and Grace did a lot to prove people's perception of LGBT mm-hmm. Americans. And now everyone watches that and go, you know what? They were wrong.
There was a couple of good episodes.
There were some really good episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. But you know, it's part of it is like, I thought by doing this podcast that we were changing people's minds and, you know, in some ways, you know, we're providing some comfort to people, but I don't know. It's I'm getting a crisis of faith here. Damon, help me.
Okay, Fausto, you've been at this long enough to know, to see historically that the pendulum swings back and forth a lot.
You know, RuPaul likes to say, you know, the window in drag opens and closes. But I'm like, I'm of the mindset, you know, if that window is closed, you get a sledgehammer and you break it open. It's a window. It's made out of glass. It's not bricks.
It changes. We happen to be going through a phase right now, culturally and politically in this society, where the pendulum is swinging pretty strongly in the opposite direction that it's been swinging in for most of the past 8 years during the Obama term. And that was the time that the digital media thrived, that Feast of Fun really thrived, that you really found your audience, that, you know, you did and you continue to get out some very important ideas into our world. And whenever people express like, well, what can I do? I was like, well, first of all, you can be the change you want to see in the world. And you guys at Feast of Fun are doing that all the time. And please don't underwrite that. Please don't undervalue the way that just by putting out these intelligent, fun, playful conversations, intelligent conversations into the ether for over 13 years now, you have shaped and changed a lot of people's lives. An entire generation has grown up listening to your show, and you know that. You hear that all the time. Now, what you're going to hear more concretely...
Like, you know, kids, are you paying attention, kids?
Go on, Damon.
Sorry.
but maybe some of those kids need to remember to vote next time. that's going to be key, right, in the next election. But what you tend to hear, what you literally tend to hear, are the complainers or the haters or, you know, the whiners. Those are the ones you're actually going to hear more of. I know for a fact that you get plenty of feedback from people who love your show, listen all the time. And so, you know, an entire generation has come out and been gay and fabulous because of the show. And so you're having an impact. And a lot of that is not going to be evident. A lot of that is not going to be obvious to you. But it doesn't mean it's not happening. It doesn't mean you're not changing things. It doesn't mean it's like the butterfly effect, right? They talk about in Buddhism that a butterfly spreads its wings and its repercussions are felt all over the world. It's just not always in obvious ways. You're doing a lot more than flapping wings like a butterfly. You're putting out ideas and hopes and fun and love in the world. That is having an impact, Fausto. It sure has had an impact on me. You talked about me being one of the first voices about PrEP. You guys were talking about it before I was.
Well, I just was looking for something crazy and outrageous to talk about. And I was like, that was the news story. I was like, just in time for Christmas, a pill that stops HIV. And people are like, you, we got so much hate mail for that. And people are like, you are being irresponsible. And I was like, do you know this? I think at the time we were calling science. We were called Feast of Fools at the time.
No,
right?
I think it was Feast of Fun.
We were Feast of Fun at the time.
What year did PrEP come out?
The science came out at the very, very end of 2010.
Yeah, I think it's
post RuPaul's Drag Race. We're Feast of Fun. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And you had, right after that, you had a show with Jim Pickett where you talked about it. And as far as I know, you were the first podcast, the first media resource to really cover this thoroughly and help people learn about it.
The iPrec study, I think, is what it was, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So you did change minds with that directly and indirectly. Maybe you got pushback for it, but you introduced that possibility in tens and thousands of people's brains that there is a pill that could prevent HIV. So when I started blabbering about it and everyone else started talking about it, that possibility had already been created because of you two and Jim Pickett. So
are you saying that Jim Pickett is like Blondie and we're like Madonna and you're like Lady Gaga? When it comes to barebacking.
Well, back then, though, it was like,
think about that.
It was a hard concept for people to wrap their head around. They just didn't, they couldn't get, they're just like, well, how is this even possible? This doesn't make any sense. They couldn't get behind the science. And then the other point, too, is like, what was something that was hard for people to understand was if you are undetectable, if you're HIV positive, if you're on meds and you're undetectable, there's like no chance of you spreading the HIV virus. And people just, that was another one. They just couldn't understand it. Or like two HIV positive people having sex with each other. How could you do that unprotected? You're going to create a super monster bug. There's so much.
That was an episode of Supernatural, though.
No, that was for real. Like that was. These were all concepts that were just super hard for people. They're always like, "But what about? But what about? What if this happens and that happens?"
The AIDS crisis did manifest itself into a super into a fantasy horror film called Species. Do you remember that? Species 2?
I don't remember that one.
So Species was the idea. The first Species movie was that this monstrous alien who was designed by H.R. Giger, the same designer who designed the alien monster in the Sigourney Weaver films, right? And this this alien lands on Earth and transforms herself into a beautiful woman. And she goes around New York City eating people. You know, she fucks them and then she kills them. And it was, of course, it was like, you know, HIV and AIDS, you know, anxiety, right? So then the superbug concept came out there, which was the idea of if two of these super monsters had sex with each other, they would give birth to an evil baby that would destroy humanity. And so in Species 2, an astronaut goes into a really hunky astronaut goes into outer space, gets infected with the alien, and he comes back to Earth and he mates with the Species lady, and you know, all hell breaks loose. And in a lot of ways, you know, like I think the movie Aliens was a lot of people's men's anxieties about vaginas and birth. And I think the Species movies was definitely our anxiety about STIs and the AIDS crisis.
I like that. And you know, that reminds me of the movie Liquid Sky, which was a classic early 80s horror film, which was all about AIDS at the time, and the metaphor of AIDS and killing. You have sex with someone and then they die. It was very campy, but it was very scary and sad at the same time.
You know, I remember Liquid Sky having it was really slow paced.
It's so low budget and campy, but it shows you a part of New York punk scene.
God, I haven't seen that in 80s. Forever.
Oh, I think it's on YouTube now. I think you can just see it on YouTube. It's a classic. I highly recommend it.
Mark and I are putting together a list of films that we want to torture Brian Sweeney with in a new podcast series.
Oh, he loved Liquid Sky.
And I think he actually might like it, but it is kind of a ways a terrible film.
It's wonderful, but it's Showgirls terrible. It's so good because it's just so bad. But you know, we were getting on this because you were saying you guys were talking about the idea that if you're living with HIV and undetectable, you cannot transmit HIV to others, and that is something you have been talking about for years that people resisted. Well, guess what the CDC just told us on September 27th this year.
That right? same thing, September, right?
Said, they Mark just and released Sasso it. Are right.
So you were right. And this is what I'm saying about the ideas you're putting out into the world. You even said at the beginning of the show, why is it that all of our guests from the show get those blue verification things on Facebook and we don't have one? Well, one of the reasons why is because you have been spending 13 years generously, lovingly giving a platform for artists and authors and performers and leaders, and you have given us a platform for that.
Well, that's so sweet of you to say that.
Aww.
And I'm being rational. Thank you. I mean, I love you guys, but I'm also just being truthful here. You are part of the change. And I do believe, because I'm an optimist, you guys have known me a long time, so I've always seen the silver lining. I do think politically in this country, we are going to see the pendulum swing back this year, which historically is quicker than we used to see. It used to be like every 4 to 8 years, the pendulum would swing. I think we saw in the 2017 elections, and I think we saw with all the women who ran for the first time and won, and we saw that there's going to be a shift. That in Alabama, for God's sakes, we saw this. There's already a shift happening where people are on both the left and the right, I think, are rethinking what does it mean to be part of a society that gets along, even when we don't agree with each other. That we still have to find a way to coexist, and we can do this in a way that's loving and respectful, even when we have different views and different opinions. We are not going to enable the rapists, the pederasts, the Roy Moores of the world, the 45s of the world who use women as predatory animals. I think we're going to see less of that. Now, there's always going to be a base for this in this country, and I guess that's the harsh lesson I've had to learn. There's always going to be a base. When 45 said, and I call him 45, I don't want to say his name out loud, but when he said, one of the truest things he said is like, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody dead and still win the presidency. And that turned out to be probably one of the rightest things and most accurate things he's ever said, because his crazy base does support him and they always will. But I don't think the majority of Americans represent that base. And I think we've already started to slowly see the pendulum shift. And you two and me and so many of the people we know are part of making that pendulum swing back to the loving, compassionate energy we want to see more of.
Well, can I get an amen up in here?
You got a day man right here.
Part of me is like, you know, I think that's why I love RuPaul's Drag Race, even though the show has kind of like some glaring flaws. It's just, you know, it's that friend that you adore, but sometimes you just, you know, you need them in small dosages. And part of it is because the show is kind of this wonderful escape from a lot of these depressing realities. You know, and it's just something that's like, you know, and like last week, Thorgy Thor, spoiler alert, got eliminated. And, you know, I thought she got a bad edit. You know, she's definitely was set up to be in a situation in a challenge where she was sent home. But then I start reading like press interviews with her, and she's just like this really negative, bitter pill about it. And to me, I'm like, you got an opportunity to be on television in front of millions of people. This is something that seldom gets offered to most individuals in this world. And yeah, you got sent home early. You were asked to spend thousands of dollars in creating all these outrageous costumes that probably won't be seen by a large number of people. but you had that experience. And in some ways, like, a lot of people have never been to Disney World mm-hmm. or been ridden a Space Mountain. And when you have, it's to be complaining because, you know, there was no toilet paper in the bathroom or, you know, because somebody cut in front of you in line, to me seems very ungracious. And so, you know, and to me, it's like, it's part of it is like, we have so many cool, awesome, exciting things in the works right now for us as a community that it's easy to sort of focus on all the negative stuff as well.
And it's as though most of media has always been about focusing on what's negative. I mean, it goes back to this idea, if it bleeds, it leads. Yeah. Anything that's wrong, anything that's catastrophic is going to make front page headlines, is going to be on talk shows. You know, you can't do a reality show that's really about reality because reality would be boring. But, you know, they edit it together in a way where, like, if somebody says 10 minutes of really wonderful stuff and then they make one pithy comment, they're going to focus on the one pithy comment. They're going to focus and create the story and the narrative around somebody who doesn't like somebody else and somebody who's trying to, you know, be ungrateful and ungracious. That's the story they're constructing, right? So that's, but it's not the story that we have to be living. And that's not the story that we have to follow in this world.
Well, the story that's even real, when you look at like articles, they're like, look at these, you know, these racist tweets. And then, so they feature like five people and their racist tweets. And like, they're trying to paint like a whole community like this or something, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just like kind of like blows some of these things like totally out of proportion. And I use racism as an example. You could use it, misogyny. You could use any kind of ism or anything. It's like, they'll take the five most wackadoodle people in the world and make it seems like everybody's on board with this.
And maybe even the journalists themselves wrote those tweets, you know? Just to have a story to write about. But, you know, I think there always is going to be negativity in the world. I certainly had high expectations with the Super Bowl halftime show when they announced Justin Timberlake that he would be bringing on Janet Jackson and having some kind of redemption, that America had moved forward mm-hmm. and said, you know what? We may have reacted a little too much to the boob gate, breast gate. And here's your chance, you guys, to wow us once again. And Janet Jackson, not shortly before the halftime show at a press conference, says, I am not in the halftime show, just to be clear. Mm-hmm. And then Justin Timberlake begins his halftime show singing the same song at the same place. You know, I'm going to have you naked by the end of this song, mm-hmm. Bringing sexy back. Mm-hmm. And he pauses and he looks at the camera and says, aha, gotcha. And I just thought that was such an ungracious thing for him to do. I mean, obviously, he had to acknowledge that being back in the Super Bowl.
And it was a song for him, you know.
So and it was a big hit for songs. Him.
And I got to say, I was majorly disappointed because I thought, oh, they're just going to keep it quiet so there's not much controversy. And she'll come out and everything's going to be cool and everybody will get excited. And it was just like, it's not going to happen.
So I thought it was cheap. And it you know, he's such a charming, cute, adorable artist and... You know, certainly Justin Timberlake strikes me as somebody who would be a lot of fun to hang out with for a billionaire entertainer. But at the same time, I just thought it was a really, you know, didn't handle that very well. And if you can bring Prince on projection, you could have had Janet Jackson on projection and project that booby.
I was pretty disappointed with that show, with that halftime show. This is someone I actually like a lot of what Justin Timberlake does. I like a lot of his music, but I really, really resent the politics of everything that went down 14 years ago. And it just shows us that I think today our society is just still not prepared for a woman of color to be empowered and strong about her sexuality. And if she does that, she is going to be punished. And that punishment doesn't go away in 14 years. Now, meanwhile, any man, especially any white man, can run around the Super Bowl and jump around with his shirt off. And Anthony Kiedis did that a few years ago for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. He was running around shirtless. His tits were hanging out. No big deal. He's a white man.
And Luis Fonsi looks just as good as Zuleika Rivera. Why wasn't his shirt off when he was singing Despacito?
I don't know. But, I mean, just, okay, now I'm no fashion critic, but oh my God, that outfit he was Justin was wearing was like disgusting. Was really bad. It was hard on the eyes.
It was the shirt was by Stella McCarthy, but people said, have you seen the tweets that say, compare it to like a Bob Ross painting? Or another person tweeted, who wore it better, Justin Timberlake or Mac OS Sierra?
you mean Stella McCartney?
McCartney, yeah.
Yeah,
she, fashion designer, Stella McCartney, yeah.
And she's the daughter of
Paul
McCartney. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Talk about a wardrobe malfunction. That was a bad choice. But I think, again, it's just the privilege of that is so evident that Justin Timberlake remains gracious in the minds of this society, and he is forgiven and he is celebrated as a white male. But Janet Jackson remains stigmatized and ostracized because of that event 14 years ago. And it just really is a reflection of where our society is at and how uncomfortable our society is with women, especially women of color, standing up in favor of their sexuality.
Yeah, he's also come on a ton of criticism, too, because he's like his whole idea of like, I'm going back to my roots. And people are like, well, what are your roots? Or your roots are just our blue-eyed soul.
I think his roots are the Mickey Mouse Club, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he started there, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, his roots are appropriating music made primarily by African Americans to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's, Timberland is always his producer, and Timberland's a great producer, so he's always made very good hits for him. And then he stole it. He's borrowed influences from Michael Jackson, from Prince. He exploited Janet Jackson. I mean, he's always leaned and borrowed and exploited African-American artists for his own gain, and he's still celebrated for that today.
Well, I mean, what do you want him to pull out a banjo and sing, like, country songs or something? He's going to sing what sounds good.
I think what like you guys said, I think especially given all the Me Too movement stuff that's going on, this would have been a great opportunity to bring Janet Jackson on that stage and have it be like, you know what? We're both here. We're both survivors. We're both empowered. We're both strong. We're both beautiful. Let's bring that back. Let's forget the sexy back. Let's just bring back Janet Jackson. And,
as I understand, the Jackson family hadn't forgiven Justin Timberlake for the way he handled the controversy after the fact.
Mm.
And
part of his, he threw her under the bus.
Well, he was not like aligning with her, and instead it was like, it was like, well, she told me to do it, and this kind of situation where he wasn't taking any ownership or aligning with her. He was just trying to save his ass. And I can imagine it's very scary to be in that situation, and I don't know. I would like to think that I would handle it differently, but it's like there's your entire life, your entire career that in a lot of ways is like winning the lottery. It's, it can easy come, easy go. And you're just like doing everything you can. And everybody that surrounds you tells you to throw Janet Jackson under the bus. So why wouldn't you?
So even if that was the case, and even if we can understand it from that lens from 14 years later, I still think there was an opportunity this time to do it right, to make the situation right. And that opportunity was lost.
I think Justin Timberlake is still hurting from the fact that he invested all that money into MySpace and didn't get any of it back.
Oh, did he?
He's the owner of MySpace currently. Did
really?
You know that? Yeah.
I wonder if he still owns it or was he able to take some of that off. Slap it off. Who knows?
I think MySpace is still up as a website. Yep.
I think bands still use it. Believe it or not.
God, I kind of forgot about it.
Mm. Yeah, it kind of looks like a low budget version of like Huffington Post now.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And that's, a low budget version of Huffington Post. Hey, what did you think about Uma Thurman's article that she feels guilty and is still in pain from the car accident she suffered in the Kill Bill movie filming?
Well, I don't know if she feels guilty, but her article in the New York Times the other day affected me greatly. And I think for me as a man, I feel like this last year, the last 6 months, I've always heard tangentially about these stories of rape and assault and violence and exploitation. As a therapist, And as someone who reads media, I feel like I'm learning so much more than I ever knew. And Uma Thurman's editorial in the New York Times, which I hope people read, really drove home to me some serious concerns, because it wasn't just about the sexual assault. That was part of it. But it was also about her experience as an actress on the set of Kill Bill 2, who knew intuitively, her intuition told her, this is unsafe. This car is not safe. This stunt is not safe. Don't do this. Don't do this. And she was talked and coerced out of that instinct. Quentin Tarantino used his relationship with her to coerce her out of saying, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know your reality. I know what's going on. I know the car is safe. You're going to be fine. And so she went ahead. She ignored her instinct. She listened to him. She did a stunt, and she got seriously injured in the process. And the video of that injury is on the New York Times website right now. And it's just devastating to watch and devastating to understand that this is only one of so many examples that happens commonly in all industries, where women are being told, don't listen to your instinct. Disregard what you know is true. Do something because someone else is telling you, you quote, should or you must. And I'm trying, again, I'm reading all this, I'm learning about this, and I'm just trying to understand how, by learning about this, I can be a catalyst for something better.
She also feels like she was very complicit in enabling Harvey Weinstein, and that in some ways she feels very guilty about that.
Oh, yes, because she knew, right, because she was assaulted, she knew what was going on, she was aware he was doing it to others, and she, you're right, she did talk about feeling complicit with that, because she did nothing to stop it at the time, even though she knew it was happening. So, you know, there's a lot of pain that's coming out right now, and a lot of us, even if we were not directly affected by it, can have feelings about it and learn about it. So we don't keep exposing men and women in our society to this level of trauma and pain.
I don't feel so bad about my lower back pain anymore, though.
You know, when
I don't, because I'm like, you know, Uma Thurman, I mean, she's gorgeous. She seems like she has a really good conscience, a good heart. She's an extraordinary actor. And you know, reading that article is like, this woman is going through hell, and she still manages to keep her grace and motherfucking dignity. Yep. And to me, it's like, who am I to complain? I have a good.
Well, you're not complaining, but...
he complains.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if Uma Thurman can survive, we can all do... We can do this. You know? Well, we can overcome all this.
Perspective matters, and that's why one of my favorite books that I carry with me that's in my therapy office is called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which is about how a man survived going through Auschwitz with a sense of meaning and purpose and relevance in his life, holding that no matter what they take away from him, the freedom, the food, they can abuse him and violently starve him, but they cannot take away his sense of humanity and purpose and meaning. He won't give it to them. No matter what they do or say to him, he will not give them that sense of who he is. And it is a reminder to me that, yes, no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what's happening, we still get to choose how we react in any set of circumstances. And I do think Uma Thurman's article is a great example of that. As you said, she has been through hell. She is in pain. She is in emotional pain. She is in physical pain. And she's remaining articulate. And she's trying to work through this now and trying to, you know, figure out where to go with this. And I think that is important for us all to realize. You know, Fausto and Mark, you guys have things better than some and worse than others. You guys have privilege that a lot don't. And you've worked your asses off a lot harder for a lot of people who are successful right now who haven't worked as hard as you. So there's always...
you mean all, the entire cast of RuPaul's Drag Race, All-Stars 2, 3, and so season 10?
But there's always a way to see who's doing better. You can always see who's doing better. You can always see someone who's doing worse. And I think maybe that's just a lesson that we've just got to deal with what's on our plate right now. And again, think about how we can use this energy and this love to be interconnected and help that pendulum swing back the other way in 2018. That's really the challenge that lies before us this year. And I'm still trying to think and consider how I can be more active in the midterm elections in November, because those are really going to have a strong impact. And I don't have an answer for that yet, but that's kind of where my head's at with that.
You know,
but we can do this. Uh-huh. Yeah.
One of the most wisest, intelligent, and creative people that I've had the pleasure of interviewing various times on this podcast was the drag queen known as Katya Zamolochichkova. Pardon me for mispronouncing her name. And to me, it's like when I see a lot of these girls, the grueling schedule that they have, I think part of it is just the fact that they're like getting on an airplane, which is a very physically demanding chore to do on a daily, weekly basis for months on end, and performing in drag, which also kind of constrains your body yet again, and being exposed to, you know, to a lot of free alcohol and drugs, and some fans that are not the kindest or most rewarding, and you don't get always get your batteries recharged as a person or as an artist. To me, it's like I thought it was really wise and very healthy that Katya decided, you know what, I'm just gonna disconnect for a year and see what happens.
Oh, did she say a year?
She said, I am cutting all my gigs as of for 2018.
Wow.
As of in, you know, right now, you will not see me until 2019. And I thought, you know, boy, whoever gets that gig in 2019 is going to be charged a lot of money. But at the same
time, you know, sometimes people forget, though, when you
I don't think so. I think it's a wise thing to do. And I always tell artists, you know, mm-hmm. it just like if you're an athlete, you have to rest. Otherwise, you can't be an athlete because your body can't recover. And when you're an artist or you're a performer, you also have to rest. Mm. It's not conceivable that you just can work back to back endlessly. Even though the job may seem recreational to some degree, there is a lot of mentally and physically things that are demanding. And we all need to look in our lives and sort of make space to connect with people mm-hmm. and to recharge ourselves spiritually and mentally.
Well, you know who said that a long time ago, Fausto?
Was
you
know, Gandhi. Always,
no, well, Jesus. Cher.
Cher.
It always comes back to Cher or Gandhi. It's actually probably the same person or the same incarnation. No, Cher said that because she's been in the public eye for 53 years now, but she does go away. And she says, I get tired of being Cher. I need a break. I need to disconnect. And if you look at the five decades of her career, there's a lot of time that she hides, that she goes away. She's just got to like be on her own and not do anything public. And then she comes back and she's fierce and she's strong. But she has talked about the merits of scaling down, not, you know, stepping back from the limelight for a while, getting your groove back from the very beginning. So, and I think that's a great lesson. Yeah.
I want to wrap up this having you quickly comment on one of these listicles on overcoming depression and loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
And just quickly get y'all's thoughts on this. Because, you know, some of these things sound kind of like bullshit, and some of them sound really great.
It sounds like bullshit.
Where is this from?
This is from a site called Everyday Health, which, you know, already I'm like skeptical. Because it sounds like a spam.
Yeah.
So this one is make a little list, a plan to get yourself moving forward and getting out there into the world.
I think it's a great action. I'm always interested in knowing what the intention is behind that. What's the energy behind it? If it feels like a chore and it feels like it's anxious ridden, it's probably not going to be helpful. But if it's something you can do from a loving place, from an inspirational place, could be really helpful. Yeah.
Well, if your to-do list has like, you know, stand in a mirror and hate yourself for an hour, then do a couple lines of cocaine, then go out there and break into somebody's car and try to steal the stereo, it's probably not a good to-do list to have.
Probably not so healthy. No.
How about this? Identify what kind of loneliness do you have, whether it is from losing something or moving to a new place, from loss, or because of the fact that you're isolated in some way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's really smart.
Is this something that's like chronic, or is this because of an event?
Yeah, or a death or a loss or a change. Yeah.
What about going to church or join a cult? That's a quick way to, you know, and I think a lot of these actors in Hollywood, they go into like these cults like Scientology. Part of it is just because it's a great, or, you know, anything. It doesn't have to be like a cult that takes over your mind and body. You know, I think like a recovery group can also be a very healthy, you know, group of people that are helping each other be better. I mean, anything that you do that forces you to be around other people can be good, right?
Well, unless you're like the Manson family or Scientology or something like that. I think, you know, when we create community and from a healthy position, yeah, that's beautiful. It's a wonderful thing, whether that's the recovery community or maybe it's a sports thing or a volunteer thing or that's wonderful. But it certainly can be used in a way that can be very destructive.
I think that's the reason why a lot of people who do those drag shows, you know, who are sort of nonconformist to one degree or another, you know, it could be very empowering, even if it's just you and your friends performing for each other in a bar that doesn't get any people coming in on an off night. It still can be a lot of fun, you know, even if you're not Absolutely. Making any money and no one's showing up, it still can be a good thing.
Yeah.
How about this one? Yeah. Get yourself a dog. Dogs predate agriculture. And a lot of anthropologists say human beings wouldn't exist in the way that we are today. We might not even be the dominant species on the earth if it wasn't for our early partnership with the dog, with the wolf.
Mm. Our only allies on this planet.
Let's ask Jesse. What does Jesse think about that one?
Jesse's snoozing right now. He's okay. Fast asleep. But no, I've noticed it's like, you know, Jesse, you know, a dog is a wonderful companion to have around the house. It's like you have something there to love and you feel warm and cozy when you're around them. And I definitely don't feel as lonely living in this place without, you know, with having Jesse here.
Am I not enough?
No, you're not enough sometimes, you know. Yes. Sometimes you're not here.
Yeah, so I had part of it is like, I think, you know, having a dog can also be a luxury for some people. It's a time commitment.
Yeah, they get expensive.
You have to feed them, but you know, there are different kinds of dogs and some dogs, you know, I like the fact that we as a society have started latching onto the idea of a comfort animal. Mm-hmm. And people have been abusing that too.
Well, as a therapist, I write those letters for my clients when they ask for it, because I agree that all animals are inherently healthy and often bring out in ourselves a sense of unconditional love and connectedness that we don't always experience on our own, which is great. I also just ask people, sometimes people are so much more patient, generous, and loving to their animals than they are to their humans. And I just ask people to consider being that kind of in a loving state with their partners or their family as they are with their animals.
How about this? And I notice this behavior a lot on especially these hookup apps. Think beyond yourself. When you're isolated, when you're horny, or is it hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, halt. Mm-hmm. It can make you feel very self-focused, meaning that everything is all about you. But reminding yourself to ask if that person you want to have sex with or that coworker you want to join for lunch, if they say no, it shouldn't automatically assume that they've rejected you for all time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the Dalai Lama talks about loneliness, and one of the ways of resolving loneliness is through compassion and generosity. And generosity can be anything. Generosity can be just being generous with your time, listening to somebody's problems or holding the door for them as they're leaving the supermarket or, you know, just helping somebody. These are the tools for resolving loneliness that the Dalai Lama brings to us often. Compassion for humanity, generosity to others. That if we're practicing those on a regular basis, we are less inclined to experience a sense of separation and alienation. And I fully, in my life, in my 46 years of highs and lows, I fully believe that.
What about placing a phone call as opposed to just, you know, sending a text message or social media update? My mother says that she prefers for me to like her statuses than to talk to her on the phone.
Did she say that?
No, she did didn't. Say that one day, and I was like, oh my God, Mom.
You know, everybody's different. I actually really prefer texting to talking on the phone. I've never been a phone person, even before we had texting. But I know that some people prefer phone calls, and then, you know, that's fine. You know, I know that's meaningful to them, so I can do that. But what? I'm not a big phone call person at all.
Two more, meditate. A lot of people don't understand what meditation is. They think it's, you know, our God who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, you know, chanting something, but meditation can just be sitting still, set a timer for 1 minute and do nothing.
Yep. It just, I think it's just focused, and you can do this on the subway or you can do this at home. It's just focused inward breathing and maybe beginning the day from this place of, I am lovingly connected to others. I am part of humanity. I'm part of an energy that's greater than something that I even understand. And how can I show that and reflect that in the world today? And if you just do that for 3 minutes in the morning, that's a really, really good way to start your day before you start attacking people on social media or whatever.
Before I start attacking people, I have to remember I can make a difference in this world.
Yes, yes.
You know, I think meditation helps you have better boners, too.
Well, it certainly can.
You meditate on your boner?
No, you just...
Well, it lowers your blood pressure, right? Because you have to have good blood pressure for a good boner, right?
Yeah. I do believe that the more... Like, when I'm stressed out, when I'm working hard or not getting enough sleep, or my boners just suck, you know? But I'm well-rested and I'm happy and able to meditate. My boners are, you know, rock-hard monsters of unstoppable sexual energy.
Well, the other thing meditation does for our mind is to help us be able to concentrate and focus. And that can be good for sexuality as well, because if you're having sex with someone, but your mind is going in a million different directions and you can't focus, that's going to mess with your erection as well. Mm. So what meditation often does is let you use your mind and understand how your mind can be your greatest friend and your greatest sexual instrument.
And last but not least, hire Damon L. Jacobs to be your therapist.
Okay, I like that one.
Because you
do it over Skype, right?
If you can do it over Skype, there's apps that you can do. There's a lot of resources that we have in terms of therapy. Just talking to somebody about our problems can be really powerful, and paying them for that can really, you know, someone who's a licensed therapist can actually be a real powerful thing.
And I that human connection, which is becoming more and more rare in our society, that attention and that focus is so valuable. And that's often what therapy offers. I am personally right now in this very unique position that I've never been in, where in New York City, I've got a pretty thriving practice and I'm traveling all the time. So my dance card is kind of filled right now. But if people, and of course, people can always reach me at DamonLJacobs.com if they have a question or concern, or they can always visit the Prep Facts group on Facebook, Prep Facts Rethinking HIV Prevention and Sex, if they want to see more about what we're talking about as far as PrEP and empowered sexuality.
You know, it's really interesting because a lot of people that I talk to, they reach out to me for fitness information, and I'm kind of like, I'm the blind leading the blind to some degree, you know? Like, what works well for me is not going to work well for everybody. And I say, you know, hire a personal trainer. And they're like, they did, and they were not very happy about it. And, you know, I want to hear from people who hire internet personal trainers. Like, because a lot of these Instagram celebrities or stars or the Instahunks, you know, they may look like $1 million, but they live in abject poverty. And, you know, you can hire them really inexpensively to Skype with you, to give you feedback on just working out. And, you know, in some ways, like, working out doesn't teach you just how to have a better body, but it's about overcoming obstacles. It teaches you to get into the gym, to rest, to self-care, and to be patient.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, hiring somebody who inspires you, who gives you the ability to, you know, reach your goals can be a really great thing. And, you know, Mark, we actually are up for sale too, as experts, right?
Yeah. You can hire us. You can come visit our studio and get consulting on podcasting. Just visit our store and book it, and then we'll book a party and you can come here and check it out.
Basically what it is that you come over into our home studio, and for a very small amount of money, I mean, pretty much we give it away. It's kind of like going to graduate school. It's a graduate seminar. We take a look at your podcast and we show you how we do what we do and give you some, you know, actual actionable feedback, things you can do today to make your creative projects feel more fulfilling and more satisfying to you.
And, that sounds like fun. Yeah. And do they get to play with Jesse?
And Jesse's here if they want to.
Yeah. Or I can lock him up too, you know, depending on whether you like dogs or not. likes Jesse.
That's worth the price of admission, yeah.
Of all the guests we've had on the show, only one was terrified of Jesse. But that's for the secrets podcast that Mark and I are starting soon. Mark and I are starting a secret podcast, what we really think about the guests.
Ooh.
That'll be part of it, but not all of it.
Not all of it. But we're gonna spill our guts and all the tea in a secret weekly podcast that Mark and I are going to be doing that's available exclusively to premium subscribers only. And so we're gonna give you all the dirt, honey. And, you know, in an empowering, like non-judgmental way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just being like, this person is hurting. Just
between us girlfriends, that's all.
Just between us ghouls.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were both doing this before anybody else. I mean, now and everybody's got a podcast now. You guys were doing this in 2005, and you have the expertise, the knowledge, the experience. Anybody would be lucky to learn from the two of you. I learned so much from the two of you just by being a listener over the years. And you know what else you're doing, and you know what else? I love the show. There's one other thing that I think the show is doing that is so important in the world right now, especially right now. What you two do on every show is role model the art and skill of conversation, which I think I'm concerned about.
Well,
on social
I think that's
media
great that you're saying that, because I really have a lot to say about it.
Yeah,
that's
right. Yes.
It's becoming a dying art. Just the ability to have a conversation with another person for an hour is, you know, I'm concerned we're losing that in our society in this social media world. And you two are still showing it's possible. It's fun.
Totally know what
it's
you
interesting.
Mean, yeah.
It's engaging.
Well, the thing about our conversation, though, too, is it's still, how's the word I'm trying to say? It's still a bit of an artifice in some ways, because when you're actually having a conversation with somebody, you're supposed to stop and listen to everything that they're saying. But when you do a talk show, sometimes you're like, okay, we need to move on to the next idea. You know, and so some people get
for the benefit of the audience,
for the benefit of what's going on, so I don't have to edit it later, that kind of stuff. And so some people, if they do have a detraction against the show, a lot of times is we interrupt the guest. And, you know, all talk show hosts do it. You know, Oprah, Ellen, David Letterman, they've all gotten that complaint. I was like, oh, we wish they would just let them talk. And but you have to. As the host, you just kind of have to keep things moving. Now, there's a lot of interviews that people do listen to that are highly edited. And so you're not going to hear a guest host interrupt them, because that will be edited out. But, you know, we're on a shoestring budget. Fausto is the editor here. And it's just like, you know, it's just part of what we do. And it's part of our charm in some ways.
And it's beautiful. And not there's a lot of people who cannot do what you do, who cannot do this kind of skill, who don't have this ability.
They all want to come for me. They're all like, I'm going to start a podcast. And I'm going to blow you out of the water. I'm just like, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I want people. I think there's really, you know, and I was telling this to a peer, somebody who did podcasts for a while and stopped for various reasons. I said, please, you know, don't just delete these files. At the very least, put them on archive.org or upload them to YouTube, or give them to your local library or LGBT community center archive. Because, you know, 50 years from now or 100 years from now, who knows if any of these episodes will survive? And you really owe the future generations to know what it was like in 2018, to what our voices sounded like, what our anxiety and fears were like. You know, a lot of websites are going to disappear. You know, where's your Friendster page? Where's your MySpace page? It's gone, honey. All that shit you uploaded to MySpace, it is gone. And it could happen to Facebook. It could happen to YouTube. So archiving that stuff properly can be a really important thing for the survival of future generations.
Indeed.
Well, Damon, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. Thank you for coming all these years. I mean, how many times have you been on the podcast now? Like 10 times?
I think this is the 10th or so, or the 11th. Yeah.
It's been quite a few. I always enjoy having you on.
You're our guardian angel. You get our groove back.
You guys are beautiful. And everywhere I go, when I see, you know, I told you at the GLAAD Awards, I ran into Carmen Esposito, and you know, I know she's doing her thing and she's having all this success, but I said, oh, you know, I heard you. I remember when you started on Feast of Fun. And her eyes just lit up. She's like, I love those guys. How are those guys doing? And I know you don't always hear that from the people whose careers you launch. You're kind of like these mama birds, and you just give these people a lot of nurturing, and then they fly away, and they don't always come back to thank you. But I'm telling you, there's so many people you have helped and changed. And so let's just all keep doing it. Let's just figure out this year how we're going to keep this pendulum and love and energy flowing. And we'll get better. It'll get better, I promise.
Okay. Where in the world is Carmen San Diego Esposito? Actually, it's Cameron Esposito, but
she was touring with her wife. They were doing a two-person comedy show.
Rhea Butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to back.
But I knew who she was because of Feast of Fun. And you know,
I hate saying like you haven't changed a bit, but she is just as charming and brilliant as a comedian today as she was a decade ago. And to me, it's like, it's really great that somebody can continue sustaining that all these years, because, you know, we've seen so many other, for every person that's, you know, survived and thrived, there's a lot of people who decided, you know what? I just got to do something else in my life, you know, and that's okay too. You know, being an artist isn't always the end goal, isn't to be a professional artist. It sometimes is just to enrich yourself.
Well, and these comedians too, it's like they, you know, most comedians are like, you know, you're not really even a real comedian unless you've been doing it for like 10 years. It takes a long time. A lot of people think, oh, I can just get up there a few times and I'll be ready to go. And it's just like, no, it takes forever.
And everything is a skill. Like being on a podcast is a skill. Stand up is a skill. Improv is a skill. Screen acting is a skill. Stage acting is a skill. And all those different things, public speaking, motivational speaking is a skill. And all those things don't necessarily translate from one to the other. And so for a lot of people who have a lot of experience in one field, it can be very disheartening to try something new that appears to be related. And then you're just like, oh my God, I want to, you know, what am I doing wrong? And it makes you start questioning everything. And so that's why I notice a lot of like improv people don't like doing stand up and vice versa, or they're really scared of doing podcasts or even coming on the show because they're just like really out of their comfort zone. So the moral of the story is you're doing just fine. You're being too hard on yourself, probably.
Maybe.
Because you're an American, and chances are, or you're a Westerner who speaks English and understands my voice and knows that you're probably being too hard on yourself. And, you know, it's a little love to others, but to yourself, meaning, you know, give yourself a break. Give your, as Kate Bourne says, get out of jail free card for today.
And I'm thinking for this year, what if we tried just to be gentle, just a little more gentle with ourselves, with our partners, with the people on social media? Let's just try to be gentle for once and see where that goes.
I think my New Year's resolution is?
What's that?
Is music. Just invite music into your life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I have one of my favorite songs that sounds really weird when you sing. Hey there, lonely girl, lonely girl,
stop.
You know, it's just invite yourself to sing with a karaoke track or play some music or just invite music into your life.
Get those endorphins going.
Make music. Don't just listen to it. Even if it's just clapping your hands along with the beat.
Yes. Enjoy it. Yes.
Thank you, David. Take care. All right. We're going to end this podcast.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Love you, baby.
All right. Bye-bye.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
Damon L. Jacobs lives in New York City, in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. And you can visit him at DamonLJacobs.com.
Damon is Damon with bacon.
delicious bacon. And also, too, if you just check the tags on this podcast, you can go back and listen to some of his other shows. He did write a book called Absolutely Shouldless that we interviewed him about, which is a great book talking about how we, you know, we have this idea in our heads that, you know, we should do something. And we're like, well, where does that should come from and why do you even have it? So it's about having changing your perspective about things. And once you change, you can be in shitty situations, but with the right perspective, you can make that situation totally work for you.
You definitely should check out Absolutely Shameless.
We encourage you to check it out. Yes. And I want to remind you folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because that's how we do this. You know, you heard Damon, you know, vouch for us and say, hey, I listened to so many artists over the years come on your podcast, and then they've done gone on to do incredible things. And a lot of times for those artists, we were one of the first platforms to really notice them or to give them any kind of attention. And then they go on and do these great things. And we'd like to continue to be doing that because, you know, supporting queer artists is what we like to do.
If we don't do it, who will? Mm-hmm. We're here because you guys made it possible. And some of you guys, you know, have let your Feast of Fun Plus memberships expire for one reason or another. Maybe your credit card number changed and it wasn't updated. Maybe you just decided, you know, I'm going to let somebody else mm-hmm. cover that. But it's a very small group of people that actually make the show possible. And so right now we're kind of on the threshold that we might not be around in the near future. We rely on your financial support. We rely on your Feast of Fun Plus memberships. It's not something that we take lightly, and we really thank you for your membership. And if you can go right now to feastoffun.com/plus and consider becoming a yearly member, we can make this possible. We can be here for generations to come. Feastoffun.com/plus. My name is Fausto Fornos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye.